Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're broadcasting live today from the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls, where Delta David Geyer will join us later in the hour for a conversation about the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra's opening night. But first, exciting things happening in our studios in Vermilion. For today's Moment in Sound, SDPB Susie Hansen is in Vermilion with a special guest. Susie?
Thank you, Lori. Yes, I'm here with Ioana Galu. She is Assistant Professor of Violin and Viola here at the University of South Dakota. She's also a member of the Rollins Piano Trio. And tonight, a pretty special concert happening at the National Music Museum. Ioana is going to be playing for part of the program one of the museum's violins. And joining her on one of the museum's keyboard instruments is her colleague, Dr. Susan Keith Gray, who is also a member of the Rollins Trio. So thank you for being here this morning, Ioana.
It's my privilege.
And I'd like to, right off the bat, have you play, give us a little taste of something that's on the program tonight.
I will start with Salut d'Amour by Elgar. Even though it's all the pieces in the program are with piano, I hope you will enjoy this.
That's lovely. That's lovely. Let's talk for a minute about tonight's program, the actual repertoire on the program. It seems like it's a very accessible program. In other words, if you're not an aficionado of violin or chamber music, classical music in general, this will not be an intimidating concert.
Not at all. Not at all. And most of the works are very well known. Also, both instruments that we're playing tonight and the hall are conducive for this type of repertoire. Dr. Susan Keith Gray will play on the museum's 1855 Broadwood piano, a very rare instrument. And I will play the last three works in the program on the Cheruti violin. And also the violin I'm playing is pretty old as well, my own instrument. So I hope everybody will go home with a heart full of joy and hope and beauty.
Let's talk for a minute about this Cheruti violin. Cheruti is, he was a violin maker in Cremona, Italy.
Correct.
And he came out of the same style as Stradivari and Amati, although he was much later. This is an early 19th century
Correct.
Violin you're performing on tonight. Now, that instrument cannot leave the music museum, so we're not going to be able to hear it today, which it makes me sad, but I understand for insurance purposes it cannot leave the museum.
No.
So let's tell me a little bit about this violin. Why is it an important violin?
Well, it's one of the best violin makers that are in existence, and there are not too many violins by Cheruti around. It is an extremely expensive instrument. I think the last appraisal was pretty high, around $300,000. And it's been an immense pleasure to go and practice on it. The varnish is intact. They used an oil varnish that dried in a long time. It was very beautiful and still solid and protected the instrument and let it vibrate. I suspect the whole school of violin makers from Cremona had their own secret recipes of
their
making
own secret sauce. As
absolutely,
it were.
Absolutely. And the violin still looks like it's gold. It's a golden color. It's intact. And the museum curators and staff have been so helpful. Anytime I went there, I could practice. They would bring it to the concert hall. I even played in the Rollins Gallery And I was playing the violin and looking at the Strads they have on display, and Guarnieri's. The museum has amazing instruments. So this violin responds very easily, and it's extremely warm.
What does that mean? Translate.
So, as a string player, you don't have to fight it. You don't have to push. It just creates more sound. I remember the first time I started to play Bach Chaconne off the bat. I was so enchanted to play that violin, and I just thought, why if I try to play louder on the E string, which is the string that would crack at some point if you keep pushing, the instrument will just tell you that's enough. And I was very surprised because it kept getting bigger and bigger. I could not stop smiling. It's such a privilege. And you know how many people must have played it and the history in that instrument. So it's a whole story to pick up an instrument that kept the touch of so many great violinist from the past. So yeah, it's an incredible experience. And I picked the last three pieces on the program. That will be Piazzolla Tanti Anni Prima, Kreisler Melody, and Salut d'Amour by Elgar. Those will be the three pieces on that instrument, concluding the evening. The string curator, Ariane Sheets, will talk about the instrument on stage. She also happens to be a terrific viola and violin player. Mm-hmm. So it's a pleasure. I have played with Ariane Sheets many times.
Let's hear a little more. Let's hear something from earlier in the program that you'll be playing on this violin that you have brought with you right now.
So concluding the Mozart E minor sonata and Beethoven Spring Sonata, I will be moving to Amy Beach Romance. Amy Beach dedicated the romance to Maud Powell. Maud Powell was the very first American violin virtuoso. No matter male or female, she was the very first American virtuoso. She's one of my idols. There are recordings in existence accessible on YouTube, and she sounded absolutely fantastic. And if you think outreach and diversity, even though the terms weren't coined at that time, mm-hmm. she was it. She was the first white musician to perform and premiere black musicians' works. And also, she pioneered in the US big concertos at the time, Tchaikovsky, Sibelius, and so forth. And no wonder Amy Beach dedicated several works to her. Also, Maud Powell, again, the equivalent of a rock star nowadays, mm-hmm. Her rest between the big city solo concerts found her in small towns performing for people because she believed in the message of the classical music. So to me, Maud Powell left such a legacy. So it's an honor to play this romance with the incredible pianist Susan Keith Gray this evening. So I'll play the beginning of it.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to talk a little bit about you. And And where you have been before you came to South Dakota. You came here in August of 2016.
Correct.
But you are a native of Romania.
Correct.
I have previously met you one time, and I remember that we talked a bit about being in Romania, growing up as the communist era was ending. And you were part of the, I guess I would describe it as the Eastern Bloc system of music education.
Yes.
Which was a very particular type of music education. And some would say it produced results, but there is more to it than that. Could we talk for a couple minutes about your background and then coming to the United States, and now you are an educator in our music education system, and a little bit about the differences.
Sure, sure. So I was born in Transylvania, Romania. My parents are retired professors of mathematics and physics, very, very big music lovers. They had permanent tickets to opera and symphony. I ended up doing music because I disturbed an operetta. They took me to Don Pasquale and I started to conduct, and they tried to make me quiet down. I was about 4 or 5, I think. And I didn't understand why they didn't let me help the orchestra,
sure,
because I was like into it and
it's
I was helping.
It's participatory, isn't it? Right? That's what you think when you're four.
But back in the day, it was a petrifying event. So my grandmama said, you know what? I think she needs to go to the music school so then she can shut up during the concerts and appreciate it. The Romanian government, the Romanian state, funded everywhere in the country music schools that had a schedule after the normal school hours. So if you got in, by the way of admission, they would test your talent, musical talent, then you had free musical instruction. Mm. You had 2 violin lessons a week. You had orchestra, you had choir, you have theory and solfège. Every week for free. So I started in that music program. It was a rocky beginning for me because, you know, you're a kid and you don't really want to practice so much. But then suddenly at around the age of 10, I started to feel this immense love for violin. I said, I cannot live without it. At the time I was running for the Romanian junior team. I was doing a lot of other things. I loved school and academics. And yet violin just stole my heart forever. So at the age of 13, I had to make a decision if I wanted to go into music. So that was early for that time. And then I was taken to Cluj, a prestigious music school and high school and conservatory. And I took another admission and I went to the boarding school there. And I kept going there until I finished high school. So from 7th grade, I was in that boarding school. The revolution happened in my 9th grade. I was almost 16. So we witnessed that.
And what, well, I could just generally say, what was that like? But more specifically, what was your first reaction when you saw this unfolding or heard this was happening?
Well, we were aware that what was happening in the country before the revolution,
Sure.
The demagogy and the dictatorship. Ceausescu was always on TV. If you turned on the TV, it was him talking, so we didn't turn on the TV. As a consequence, I don't even own a TV now. I'm doing just fine without TV. I watch movies on my own if I need to watch something on my iPad. So yeah, no TV, which, like, looking back, I'm like kind of happy about it. You couldn't speak your mind if you said the wrong thing, like, oh, there is no food in the stores, or, you know, it's cold in the, they cut the electricity. Your family could go to jail. So freedom of speech did not exist. And it was a dark time, very dark time for everybody, but we practiced, we worked hard, we were happy in our own way. We read books, we met with people, the communication and then communion with people was tremendous. I still look back and see how warm people were. You knocked on someone's house, they would just open the door for you. Whatever they had, the best they had, was on the table for you. So I think the Romanians and the Eastern European people maintained that hospitality just open heart. We were at school when the revolution started. We knew something was going on. We were all sent home. They said, just go home. It was the end of the semester. It was December. It was very cold. And we didn't know anything. We knew something was amiss, but we didn't know what was happening. It was this gloom atmosphere. So on December 20th or 21st, I still cannot remember exactly the date, the Europe Free radio broadcasting from the U.S., it was a forbidden radio station to listen to, stopped their program and said, Romanians, this is what's going on in Timișoara. Timișoara is a huge city, historical city, 2,000 years old. It had about 800,000 inhabitants at that time. People started to protest a few days before. We didn't know, but we found out everything that night. So they started to protest. They went on the streets. And Ceausescu, our dictator, was in Iran for some visit. And he ordered our own army. That's when we found out what was going on. Cut the phone connections, cut the electricity, cut the heat, water, close the stores, close the city, erase it from the map. So to this day, this is something that deeply troubles me. And apparently an American citizen, there were enough foreign nationals in Timișoara at the time. An American young man recorded in the middle of that hell when the army, Romanian army, was killing Romanian people. So they played that tape on the radio for us. So that was for me. The life before and the life after. It split my life in two.
So there's a clear line for you.
Yeah.
Before
and
after.
Yeah. We knew the atrocities. We knew what was going on. But when that happened, to see your own army killing your own sisters and brothers and wives, and it simply broke my heart. But I hope it broke it wide open. So it was a terrible time. And the next morning, the whole Romania was on the streets, and it was a very bloody affair. And it's a very long story. The result of it is was the borders opened. Nobody would be killed trying to leave the country, because that happened before. People tried to leave by any means, and they could be killed, like literally shot. And so that was good.
And you had your violin, and I imagine that became even more important to you as society, as you knew it, was unraveling.
Music saved our lives, before and after. Before, I remember coming home from school and, oh, they cut the electricity again because Ceausescu was trying to pay the debt, the external debt. So I had to stand with, like, either oil lamps or candles, and I could just say it all to the violin, because you couldn't talk at school about what was going on. Nobody. It was like the golden epoch. Everything was fantastic, right? And I could just express myself and say absolutely everything to the instrument.
Well, I'd like to hear you play some more. We have just about 4 minutes left. Can you play just one more short excerpt of something from the program tonight?
Sure. I think it would be wonderful to start the melody by Kreisler. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I want to get back to tonight's concert and share a little information. So it's tonight at 7 at the National Music Museum here in Vermilion. Once again, you're doing the first half of the program on the violin. We just heard your personal violin,
yes,
which is a late 19th century violin.
Correct.
And then the last half of the program is on the Cerruti violin, which is from the early 19th century and a very important violin.
In a very different league
sure,
of violin.
Sure. And accompanying you is Susan Keith Gray, and she's playing one of the museum's keyboard instruments, a very beautiful 19th century piano. And I want to mention that this violin, the Cerruti, was purchased for the museum by the J. Leighton Weed estate. Now, Joseph Leighton Weed was one of the first strings violin professors in South Dakota. He was at the Yankton College Conservatory of Music. Yeah. And he was very well known, beloved by many string players from South Dakota, in South Dakota. And he was also a collector himself, I guess.
Yep.
And so his estate purchased the Cerruti violin in 1990. Some of you may have heard of J. Leighton Weed because the Black Hills Chamber Music Society every year has the J. Leighton Weed Honors Orchestra. So this is a name that string players and family members of string players are familiar with. So some things coming full circle tonight, it sounds like, at the Music Museum. So thank you again for coming on the show today, Ioana.
I'm very privileged, and also it's one of my life achievements to play a recital with Susan Keith Gray. I have heard her music on CDs before I came to South Dakota, so I never dreamed to play with her, so this is wonderful.
Well, good. I bet she's thrilled to hear that, too. And of course, you are colleagues on the Rollins Trio,
yes,
as well. So an opportunity tonight in Vermilion to hear two instruments in the Music Museum from their collection, and that's not an opportunity that comes along all that often. So this is Moment in Sound on In the Moment. I'm Susie Hansen, and once again, thanks for listening, and thanks for joining me, Ioana.
It's been a privilege.